Hello and welcome to the crossover only on the Fired Up Network. My name is Alex Campbell. Thank you so much for tuning in. However you are tuning in and wherever you are doing so, I appreciate it. And just want to thank you for making us part of your day. So the NBA regular season comes to a close this upcoming Sunday. And of course, I mean, we're in a couple tight races in both conferences as far as play-in game season seeding, and we'll take a look at that. But first, we had a playoff preview game tonight with Minnesota taking on Denver in Denver. Karl-Anthony Towns was out, could be back as soon as Friday. Naz Reid was playing big minutes in the game. Both teams entered the game at 55 and 24, so it was really a battle for first place in the Western Conference. I'll tell you what, the pick and roll game of Jokic and Murray, you know, even with Murray coming off of an injury and on his minutes restriction, you could tell they were committed to making sure he didn't play beyond that restriction. But that pick and roll game is just automatic. I mean, they get the switches they want almost every time, and they know what to do with like every variable once they get the switch they want. Once he gets the picks, even if the defense plays it correctly, they know what they want to do. I'll say as far as Minnesota, Mike Conley has fit in perfectly with the T-Wolves this year. I think anytime you see a team like this, like what Minnesota's done, that's I wouldn't say maybe unexpected. They certainly have plenty of talent, you know, with Gobert, Karl-Anthony Towns, and then obviously Anthony Edwards really is their superstar now. And then to find guys like that, role players that can play huge minutes, veterans that can play, that's key when a team takes the jump like we've seen the T-Wolves do this year. And Conley has fit in perfect with them. He was the second leading scorer in the game tonight behind Edwards for Minnesota. And really that game, it essentially decides, you know, whoever wins that game is going to take pole position in the West. Like I said, I mean, because Denver plays at San Antonio and at Memphis to finish. So if winning that game meant they seized the one seed, and they do end up winning, 116 to 107. And really, it was the fourth quarter. The game was really close going into the fourth quarter. It was tied. And then in the fourth quarter, with about like 7 or 8 minutes to play, Denver broke an 84-84 tie and then extended the lead 91 to 87. And that was just after Malone had subbed out Jokic. And so I think, you know, everyone felt like it was time for the T-Wolves to capitalize. And in that tie seed, Anthony Edwards took like two shots. And it just wasn't enough. There just was not enough offense. It looked like that Minnesota really kind of settled into the pass it around the perimeter and find the open 3-point, you know, role, and just not a lot of movement on the offense beyond that. And they just were not able to consistently find good shots. And again, couldn't really find a shot for Anthony Edwards. That stretch lasted 6 or 7 minutes in total. Five, 6 or 7 minutes in total, because Jokic came back into the game by 3 minutes to play or so. And that was the real push, and again, just Jokic and Murray are just so clean together. Minnesota really, really needs a play. Because like I said, we talked about Jokic and Murray in that pick and roll game. Like Minnesota needs a play to set up Edwards in much the same way. Like, because that is really a struggle. You can tell that they are just stagnant. And again, I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns was out, and they'll probably be better with him in the lineup. That's taking a scorer, a guy who provides over 20 points a game, out of the lineup. So that it makes sense. But at the same time, they have to be able to set up Edwards in that scenario, because the offense that they were running just was completely stagnant. It just looked like Denver, you know, has the championship experience, and Minnesota doesn't. Just poor shot selection down the stretch in the last 5 minutes. No shots, you know, consistently for Edwards at all. And really they focused, you know, the defense was hurried and almost like a young AYSO soccer game, and just everybody rushed towards the ball for the T-Wolves in a way that, and this is the number one defense in the league, and Jokic is just making them look silly because they're trying so hard to cover that. Meanwhile, the role players like Christian Braun is just going off. Their offense is making mistakes and throwing the ball into transition and into passing lanes, which has given transition points to Denver. You know, and you got Christian Braun catching an alley-oop on one play and then cherry picking a dunk on the next play. It doesn't look great. And then Peyton Watson, you know, showing up huge, having, you know, five blocks in the game for Denver, and they just keep finding these role players. I mean, it was a statement game for Denver. Like I said, it won them first place in the West, and Jokic finished with 41 points. It was his 20th career 40-point game, and really, a game that was a playoff level of intensity type game. He finished, you know, 16 of 20 in the game, just a dazzling performance. And again, the best defensive lineup in the NBA. I mean, they were missing Karl Anthony Towns, but you still had Gobert, a three-time, maybe soon to be four-time defensive player of the year. Again, 41 points. He had 11 rebounds and 7 assists to go with that. He's like a 7-foot-tall wizard with a ball. And like the Nuggets, they just crush you with their core, and then they feed the playmakers offensively. You double Jokic and our Murray, and then Peyton Watson has 13 blocks in his last three games, including, you know, 5 in the game last night. So they just keep finding role players with huge upside, like Braun and Watson. Minnesota, for the remainder of the season, will finish with the Hawks at home tomorrow, and then the Suns at home on Sunday to round it out. It looks like they'll likely finish second in the West. And really, for Minnesota at this point, it is all about getting Karl Anthony Towns back healthy and available to play, because it's clear that they're going to need him down the stretch here, and need him, obviously, and not just down the stretch, but in the playoffs, because it won't be easy, to go even against the team that wins in the play-in game. If we just kind of look at the standings a little bit, right now, the T-Wolves are in second place because of that. And so the teams in the play-in game are teams like the Lakers and the Warriors, the Kings and the Suns. 3 out of 4 of those teams feature Hall of Fame players. So, I mean, if you're going to face one of those teams, then it's not necessarily going to be easy sledding, right? So the T-Wolves, and again, you're talking about a team in the T-Wolves who don't have a lot of playoff experience, who are going to be looking across the court at somebody like Kevin Durant or somebody like LeBron James or Steph Curry. You know, this is a championship level team they went against last night with Jokic and Murray within, I think, his second or third game back off of his injury. So very interesting. I know we talk a lot about the Western Conference in the NBA. I got to be honest. It's because the East, the Celtics have just run away with the East. Have just run away with the East. They got a 13.5 game lead on the Bucks, who really are not all that impressive with a record of 49-31. 49-31 would put you just outside the play-in game. In the Western Conference right now, it would put you in the sixth seed. So that's the interesting dynamic there. In other scores, yesterday, the Grizzlies fell to the Cavaliers in Cleveland, 110-98. The Raptors fell to the Nets in a late game heartbreaker, 106-102. The Mavericks over the Heat, 111-92. Doncic and Irving playing so amazing right now. Just, this is exactly what the Mavericks were looking for when they acquired Irving a year ago. The Hornets over the Hawks, 115-114. Bucks over the Magic, 117-99. Thunder over the Spurs, 127-89. Of course, the Nuggets over the Thunder, 116-107. And the late game, the Suns over the Clippers, 124-108. And again, that's another game that features two likely playoff games, Hall of Fame players, you know, that's really interesting, because similarly in that game down the stretch, it looked like one team had the playoff experience. For three quarters in that game, it looked like a playoff type intensity game as well. And it just fell apart pretty much for the Clippers in the fourth quarter. But those are the games yesterday. And in the East, like I said, you know, the Celtics have that huge lead for first, and then it's the Bucks, followed by the Knicks. And Knicks could pose an interesting threat, but with Randle out, I just don't know. The Cavs, I like the Cavs a lot. Something tells me they're more of a pretender than a contender, though. I just wanted to see more out of them this regular season. The Magic are interesting. Banchero I like a lot. And the Pacers, also young, very interesting. So I'm really excited about the Eastern Conference playoffs. The play-in game in the Eastern Conference features the Hawks. Trae Young playing well last night as well. The Bulls, the Heat, and the 76ers, right where they did not want to be, with Joel Embiid coming back. I think they were really trying to make sure that they weren't playing in that play-in game with Embiid coming back last week. And it looks like they ended up there anyways after a couple losses in the last, 4 or 5 days now. Let's see. Beyond that, you know, I was looking at a lot of the Warriors stuff with Klay Thompson and whether or not he'll stay. It looks like a lot of people are saying maybe Orlando would have a lot of interest and pay him big money. And I get it. But, you know, I've noticed that the Warriors have been running a lot of sets through Klay lately, giving him big minutes. And I think that they're really showing that they want to keep him as a core member of the team with Steph Curry and plan that nucleus going forward. I'm not sure about Draymond Green, especially with the antics this year. You know, there's part of me with Draymond that says this has been happening the whole time and the winning just cured all ails, right? But part of me too feels like the wheels have come off, and that frustration with the wheels come off has worn on what has maybe always been a player who hasn't been able to handle the highest of emotion the most responsibly, right? And so of negative emotion. And so now there's more negative emotion and an overall negative sentiment. And maybe it was much easier for Draymond to stomach that. I just don't believe that the entire time, you know, that he was up to similar antics. I watched it. He wasn't. Not necessarily. Now, was he the cleanest player? No, he wasn't the cleanest player, but neither are a lot of guys. You know what I mean? He wasn't punching guys. He wasn't pushing, you know, guys. He wasn't clearly stomping on people. He wasn't doing any of that. So, you know, I think, you know, the issue is obviously more with Draymond than anything else, and not so much that, like, nobody paid any attention to it, but that's my little diatribe about that. But, I mean, back to, you know, Klay Thompson, and them wanting to keep him as a core member. I mean, let's face it. I don't think they're necessarily wrong. He's when he first came off that terrible injury, what is it, a year and a half ago or whatever it was, he wasn't playing great. He wasn't playing great. And he got big minutes in two scenarios. He got big minutes, you know, when they were up big or they were down big, and they really would force him the ball. And it, for a while there, it was pretty ugly. But he's worked himself back into form here. He's maybe not what he always has been, but they are much, much better when they can shoot the three. They have over a 90% winning percentage in the last two seasons when they shoot over 40% from three as a team. And that definitely includes him in a major way. So he's still a splash brother, and I think that the weakest link they gotta get rid of is Draymond. And I like Draymond. Draymond as a basketball player, I really, really like. An undersized four that can cover all five positions, that is a catalyst on the offense, underrated passer, a multi-time defensive player of the year, a multi-time gold medalist on Team USA, a gold medalist that's not a bucket shooter or over 7 foot tall. Those square peg round hole. Those guys are not easy to find. Draymond is a special, special player and 100% a Hall of Famer. But at this point in his career, I don't know that the juice is worth the squeeze for the Warriors. So that will be interesting more than almost anything else here with the Warriors, because I don't think that they're real championship contenders this year. It will be interesting to see what they do in the offseason with both those two players, Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. It's a tough decision with Green. I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the Warriors. It's not a tough decision for me. I would just move on from him. It's not a tough decision for me, but I know it's got to be a tough decision for them. So it'll be interesting to see. I'll tell you what, it gets easier. It gets easier with every Antetokounmpo and any nonsense in the playoffs. And I got to imagine that helps the decision along even further. So let's switch gears a little bit to college basketball, or at least the world of college basketball, since the season's over. I'm fascinated by, the world is just full of opinions now, especially on social media. And, people take various opinions, but clearly don't take the time to study history. And I get it if you're young, like really young. And I mean, there's a lot of young people who would say like that UConn team was the best team that I've ever seen or they've ever seen. Right. Because they dominated their way to a national title. They beat a 2-time player of the year in the process. The problem is that, like, okay, but who do they play against, and what level of talent? I'm telling you, there's a disparity there. I think you think what you want about Zach Edey as a pro prospect. And if he is right, let's say that for what all intents and purposes is 1996, Zach Edey is like the third overall pick or something like that in 96. Right. Either way, Purdue only has one pro prospect. UConn has 4, maybe even 5. And maybe even one off the bench. So when we say, yeah, I've never seen anything like that, okay. And speaking of never seen anything like this, I've heard the same thing about John Calipari. And it's like, what are you talking about? Does anybody remember Tubby Smith? Tubby Smith was the coach at Kentucky, like John Calipari. He won a national title like John Calipari. He was there for 10 years. He still had years left on his contract, and then he took the Minnesota job. Now, Minnesota's not as good of a job as Arkansas, but, there's a similarity there in that you leave Kentucky for a, quote, lesser job, and you get out before you get fired and reset your shot clock, if you will. You get restarted. So Calipari is now officially out at Arkansas, or at Kentucky, and he's at Arkansas. He stays 15 years before leaving, but we'll see how long he stays at Arkansas. There's something interesting going on with Kentucky, though. If we're being honest with ourselves, really honest, the presumption is that Kentucky, over the years, more often than not, took care of their guys, right? Took care of their players. Now, was it always an illegal inducement? Probably not. I don't know. But they went on probation while Calipari was there. And, it wasn't the first time for Kentucky either. Right? The perception nationally is Kentucky has always done things at a minimum in the gray area, and many times not so much in the gray area. And now, in the period of NIL and all the ultra mobility of players, and there's just no limits. It's the Wild West, as I often call it. Now that that's gone, There's no more cheating to be done. There's no more advantage for a school like Kentucky. I don't mean to put it in those terms, but it takes the power away from Kentucky. It cuts the power off for Kentucky. If you want to spend the money now, it's right there for you. And so this brings on, that kind of dynamic, like John Calipari won at UMass. He won at Memphis. He won at Kentucky. And then all of a sudden he found some relatively hard times. Is it because he didn't know what he was doing? Is it because the games passed him by? I think to a certain extent it is, because the because of the one and done stuff. He puts a lot of guys in the pros, but he can't really compete for national championships. Not genuinely anymore, because we see the best teams recruit at a similar level to Kentucky, have players that stay one or only 2 years and then go to the pros, but then also have veterans do a little bit better job in the transfer portal. You know, teams like UConn and North Carolina. And I just think the creme de la creme of college basketball mostly is better than Kentucky and has been for at least the last 4 or 5 years, maybe longer. I don't think it's because he doesn't know what he's doing. I think he really truly believes in a philosophy that once, you know, found him really, really big success and no longer does. I mean, everybody knows that like this new game of college basketball and really all of college sports, it is not necessarily parity. I mean, if you're fully invested as a program, if you're fully funded, then you can compete. You can compete. And then, you know, there are these reports that Kentucky is looking at Baylor's Scott Drew. Okay, Scott Drew, do you remember how Scott Drew got started at Baylor? Okay. The former coach, Dave Bliss, had been breaking rules. He'd been cheating, and it's crazy. It's just absolutely insane. But one player murdered another player on the team, fit for a true crime, you know, documentary. And they blamed so many of the problems on the kid who died. It was insane. Then there was a recording of it between the coaches talking about it. It was really ugly and just tragic stuff. And so Scott Drew took over the program in 2003. He had to go recruit like walk-ons. They had absolutely nobody. And they basically shut down the program for a year. They only played conference games. So you go from 8 wins, you know, when they first started out, to like 9 wins, and then like a whole decade of clawing, and then a national championship, eventually 2 Elite 8s. And it took a long time. Right. But it took them until 2007 to get to their first NCAA tournament. So it took them 4 years to get back, and then it took them until 2010 to get to the Elite Eight. And they did that twice. And then it took them until 2021 to win a national championship. So he's won 20 games or more every year except for one since 2012. Just done a remarkable job there at Baylor. But if he's looking at Kentucky, I mean, do you want to know what the other half looked like? Because it's a disappointing year for Kentucky this year. And it was a first round exit after winning 25 games this season. That's the difference in those two programs. Super high expectations, but more financially rewarding, more ego rewarding at Kentucky. Certainly. I think it's a really hard decision if he's already been offered the job or if it does come to him. And I don't know, put me in those shoes. I don't know what I would do. And look, you have, you know, Tubby Smith. Smith is a good man, and you're, you know, and for him it was 10 years, and they tried to run him out of the building. and John Calipari is a respected guy, at least for performance and putting guys in the pros that compete at high levels. I mean, as far as recruiting, Calipari is as good as anybody I've ever seen. And 15 years, and he was out, you know. I know everybody says I don't mess with happy. I don't know. Do you go after the brass ring if you're Drew? Do you? Your margin for error, even at Baylor, who's been incredibly successful, like I detailed, is far more slight than it is at Kentucky. It just is. It just is. I mean, you'll be able to recruit the best of the best at Kentucky. Compete for national titles every year if you're a guy like Drew. On the other hand, the expectations at Kentucky like are that you do compete for a national title every year. They're much higher than they are at Baylor. Those Baylor fans don't expect you win in 21. They're not looking right now. They're not looking at this year. They're not looking at next year. They're not looking at last year thinking like, well, we better win another one. They're excited at the prospect of maybe doing so, but they're not expecting it. Kentucky, they'll expect it. It's a disappointing year, 25 wins. You know, and I just wonder what that's, you know, like to kind of work through that and talk through that with yourself and figure that out. It's got to be wild. It's such a huge thing. It's one thing about Kentucky's money, and there could be a whole lot of it, but now all these coaches are so well compensated. I mean, could you use $4, $5, $6 more million dollars? Absolutely. Right. But at what price? Paradise? At what cost? There's already so much that goes into college coaching. That's why you see all these, you know, old stalwart college coaches retiring now. A guy like Drew, you're already making $4 or $5 million. Your house is probably paid off. All this money is getting put away in a most, you know, in most rational scenarios. I'm not going to try to assume anything about his life, but so, I mean, like, to the person who says this is, it's life changing money. I mean, it is and it isn't. You're a basketball coach. It's not changing your life. I guess it makes it easier to walk away at the end of the day. But he's in pretty good shape. He's relatively young still. There's no doubt that he hasn't spent a pretty penny on his home in the last 10 years. He's sitting on equity. He's just been stuffing all the money away. I mean, you know, if he got like $25 million saved up, like, what are we really doing? You can't spend it all. It's not like he lives that type of lifestyle. But why did you get into the sport? Huh? You want to change and help people and coach, but you also want to compete for a championship. And is it easier to be a champion at Kentucky than it is Baylor? I would say it probably is. It absolutely is, in fact. And it's a sacrifice. But, you know, everything's a sacrifice. If you stay, you're sacrificing the consistent opportunity to compete among the best. And if you, and you're sacrificing the chance at generational wealth and the type of money that could, you know, in 4 or 5 years, if you want to never coach ball again, buy a house on an island, get a jet, you could do all those things. If you stay, you sacrifice that. Or if you leave, you're sacrificing a lot of relationships. You're sacrificing a peace of mind. You're sacrificing that comfortability, the larger margin, the slighter margin, sorry, but the bigger cushion. There isn't really a wrong answer, and I'm not sure there's really a right answer. We'll talk more about that kind of as the spring unfolds. But John Calipari, officially the head coach at Arkansas, and now apparently the attention turns to Scott Drew, who's Baylor's head coach, and they literally, I'm telling you, he built it from just nothing, stripped it down, had only walk-ons. Then the third year, they played only conference games just to punish themselves, and they just started completely over and built an absolute juggernaut of a program. So much so, they opened a beautiful brand-new arena. They got everything you could ever want. The players are coming in now, but it's just not Kentucky. What would it be like to go from, you know, look at what Drew has done, go from, you know, coaching under his dad at Valparaiso to being head coach at Kentucky. I mean, come on. So just crazy. In other college news, Zach Edey became the first person since Ralph Sampson did it in 1982 and 83 to win the John Wooden Award in back-to-back years. So that's remarkable. Edey, of course, we've talked a lot about his prospects in the pros. Man, I just don't know. It's a conundrum. It is an absolute conundrum. For you fans out in Toronto who are interested in him, more power to you. More power to you. I just don't know. He doesn't quite have, he's got a lot of the same skill set that offensively in the post game that a guy like Jokic has, but he lacks the part of the skill set that Jokic has that makes him truly dynamic. The ball handling, the passing, and the ability to shoot the three. See, like, Jokic can't get out to the perimeter either, right? He's a liability defensively to a certain extent. So would be Edey in much the same way. But like the difference is combine Jokic and Edey, you get Yoki in your mind, apparently. But Jokic, like I said, the ball handling and the passing and the ability to shoot the three. You stretch the defense on one end, then it's acceptable that you can't get to the stretch bigs on the other end. But if you don't do that, if you can't stretch them on the offensive end and you can't get to the stretch bigs on the defensive end, then you don't create enough opportunities offensively, and you also in the modern NBA, and you also don't get out to that perimeter and stop the shots. I mean, watch any current NBA, the playoffs will start soon. You watch any playoff game. The NBA is so 3-point heavy. Steph Curry undeniably changed the game. But everything's a pendulum. Look, it'll swing back at some point. Look at right now, they've got a young kid in the league, Wembanyama, who's 7'4", maybe 7'5". It could be a very soon we see a return to post play, tonight. Or last night there was a game where a younger kid, Peyton Watson, had 6 blocks. And I mean, it's one thing when Wembanyama at 7'4", 7'5", has 6 blocks, but Watson's a kid who just jumps high enough to grab coins off the top of the backboard, man. Like, it's just insane. So that's gonna do it for me for the crossover this gorgeous day in Boston. So c'est la vie, and stay classy, my friends.